Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring Giants players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Giants third baseman Matt Duffy joins us each homestand.
I think when I'm going best is when I'm just staying short, trying to hit the ball right back up the middle and seeing it well.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. And joining us today, our special guest, ESPN's Jason Stark. And Jason, normally here on this Giants podcast, well, we would start with the Giants, you know, but this time we really have to start with this brawl because, you know, this is the biggest story in baseball today and probably, you know, for a while after Rougned Odor, you know, punches Jose Bautista. And I mean, what a punch, just a wild swing and hits him in the face. First of all, you know, what did you think of it? Because I mean, you got all kinds of things going on. You got the slide by Bautista. He gets hit by the pitch. There's the anger about the bat flip last year, all that stuff going on.
There's a lot going on. I've been searching all morning for my copy of the unwritten rule book. Still looking. Apparently everybody's got a little slightly different version of it because lots of accusations flying about which unwritten rules were violated, but I guess it all starts with the first one, the Bautista bat flip, 7 months earlier to the day, and apparently that one was still lingering with the Rangers. And from what I'm hearing, Joe, this came from the players. It began to dawn on them yesterday. They didn't like this guy. They didn't like this bat flip. This was really their last chance to send a message. So it took 7 games, the final at bat, final game that these two teams play against each other all year, for somebody on Texas to throw at Jose Bautista. And it turns out to be Matt Bush in his second game in the big leagues, a guy who wasn't even in their organization at the time of the bat flip. And then we kind of went from there.
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting because I just talked to John Gibbons last week and had him on the podcast. Here's what he said.
That was 23 years of frustration for a country tied into that one. And you know, really his first postseason, most of our first postseason. So, I mean, it was so much emotion. You know, Jose's an emotional guy, you know, but the game's changed so much. And you know, I'm an old school guy myself, you know. But I think what's happened in this game, I mean, you look around on each side, you know, when a guy hits a home run, everything's so animated now. You know, when a pitcher gets a big strikeout, you know, they ham it up a little bit too. So, but society's changed, the way everything's viewed. You know, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of it, but I think what's happened, and if most managers are honest with you, probably tell you, you know, when it's happening for you, you don't mind it. When it's happening against you, you don't like it one bit. So that's kind of the way it is.
So he kind of gets that, but at the same time, there was his player, you know, taking out the second baseman and not happy about getting the repercussions of that bat flip.
Yeah, the repercussions, not a big fan of that, apparently. I'm with him, and I've been talking about this and writing about this quite a bit. You know, even this year, I think it's time for the culture in baseball that says you can't celebrate a moment like that to change. That has to change. It's changed in the other sports. You could argue it's out of control in the other sports, but whatever. If baseball really wants to compete with those sports for the youth of America, especially the African-American, non-Caucasian youth of America, that has to change. If baseball is going to reach the kind of demographic that it's missing, that lost generation, those that 18 to 29-year-old or 34-year-old demographic that's probably playing fantasy baseball and is opening the MLB app but isn't watching the games, isn't watching the postseason, might hang at the ballpark because it's fun to be there. if they're going to reach that group, that culture has to change. And so for 7 months later, that kind of fiasco to break out in the middle of a baseball game because of a bat flip that happened in October, I'm going to say this one more time. That has to change.
It does. I mean, and you know, the thing that was striking to me about it is that you have players just kind of taking it onto themselves to go ahead and, you know, punch somebody. I mean, it was obviously wasn't baseball anymore. That's what was striking. I'm going, wait a minute, this is like a hockey game now. You know, you got somebody throwing right at somebody, and we've seen that in baseball, but now you've got somebody completely ignoring the rule about sliding to second base. I'm just going to take this guy out. It's just, there was no more baseball. That's what kind of bothered me about it.
Well, that happens in brawls.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, look, emotion is a great thing, and that bat flip was fueled by emotion. But the emotion we saw yesterday, not such a great thing. Here's a question for you to answer for me. Was Jose Bautista, what he did with that slide, a violation of the unwritten rules of baseball? It was definitely a violation of the written rules.
Right.
Everything about that slide was illegal. But I honestly think that the Rangers expected him to come in hard if he had the opportunity. It was his last opportunity, his last at bat, his last time on base against that team. They had to figure they were going to get something from him. So was that slide over the line for you?
Well, no. You know, it's interesting. Because of the new rule, it was. Because it's so far away from what you're supposed to be doing. Because before, you could take out an infielder. And basically, that was it. You could take him out, you know, try to make it seem like you're getting to the bag. But now you're supposed to slide into the bag, not into the fielder. And, you know, so that's why when you hit a batter, it's kind of like, okay, well, you're allowed to pitch inside. If all of a sudden there was a rule that said you can't pitch inside at all, and then you go and hit a batter, then it's just so far removed from what that rule is that it really becomes egregious, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right. Well, what about Rougned Odor? Well, look, the punch, we understand.
Oh, man.
Can't do that. But how about him dropping down to make that throw? Was he protecting himself, or was he trying to injure Jose Bautista?
Yeah.
Not exactly sure. What do you think?
That's another part of it, and maybe that's true, and maybe, you know, that entered into it. But I don't think so. You watch Bautista going in the second. I mean, he was just a man on a mission. He was not happy that he got hit by the pitch. You know, the other thing, Jason, is that when you look at the bat flip, I'm not a big fan of the bat flips. I don't think you should show up a pitcher. But that bat flip happened in the playoffs. You know, it was a lot of years of frustration for a country. As John Gibbons actually said something about that. You know, I can kind of see that a little bit. If you're going to go back and be angry about that now, it seems kind of silly.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, what a moment. If that moment had happened to the Rangers in Texas, what would they have done? You know,
right.
I just don't understand this culture that says you can't celebrate a moment like that. It's got to change.
We'll be right back with Jason Stark from ESPN. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco, where you might see Giants relief pitcher George Contos.
It's a great golf course. It's very convenient for us to get there, and it's a very challenging course. If you're not in your game, you get in the rough. Rough's along there. It's a very beautiful course. They're very gracious and get us out there anytime we're able to get out there for an off day and play some golf. So, you know, just with how beautiful the course is and how challenging it can be, it's always a lot of fun getting out there and playing around.
A little reminder, each week during the season, we'll be giving away a free T-shirt from thesportsvirus.com. All you have to do is ask a question for one of our guests, and if your question is chosen, you'll receive a free T-shirt from thesportsvirus.com. To send your questions in, email us at thesportsvirus@gmail.com or on Facebook, thesportsvirus.com page, and please like us while you're there. All right, let's talk about the Giants a little bit
here.
And, well, the 4 and 5 starters really had been an issue. If you looked at it last week when I was starting to ask you about coming on this podcast, Jake Peavy, Matt Cain, they were struggling big time. You wondered what the Giants were going to do. You had Tim Lincecum throwing the showcase. Maybe they would go for him, give him a starter's role, just dump one of those guys. Well, it looks like the Giants made the right move by being patient, because Peavy now has come out. He threw a great game, the last one out. Cain has 2 outstanding starts in a row. So I guess sometimes you have to trust your veteran guys.
Yeah, you know, nobody is more patient than the people who run the Giants. And you know, I think that they're going into this with their eyes open. They understand the limitations of those two pitchers, but it's such a long haul, and the repercussions of making a panicky decision were too great to do anything too quickly. Now that we got that out of the way, I still think they're both a concern. I actually talked to a scout the other day who had been following the Giants, and he said he thinks that the stuff of all five starting pitchers, including Mad Bum, is down in some way, some more than others, obviously. Madison Bumgarner's always finding ways to be great, but fastball not as good, stuff not as crisp, location not as good. Johnny Cueto needs more deception. Jeff Samardzija is kind of a case unto himself. Has never seemed to equal the appeal of his stuff. And then Peavy and Kane, just the decline of their stuff is a bigger issue to me than the results. And it's something that's going to have to be monitored, but it's not something that needs to be addressed right this minute. Just when you get to July, I think you need to see more, because one of those guys, if you've got October ambitions, is going to have to make an impact if you're going to advance.
I do think that it's been noticeable what you're talking about as far as the stuff not being as good. And maybe Kane, maybe his stuff looks a little better than it did the last few years, but not the old Kane. And maybe the ballpark definitely, of course, you know, helps Giants pitchers. And that kind of leads me to Tim Lincecum. I mean, why wouldn't he want to come back to the Giants, a team that's going to contend, you know, and is going to, you know, you're going to be in that ballpark. He does want to start, but how badly does he want to start if the White Sox decide to sign him in that ballpark? You know, what's his ERA going to look like?
I can't see him with the White Sox. I don't understand the fit from their end. I don't really understand the fit from his end, other than if they're dangling the opportunity to start and they have sincere interest, it's always good to have more teams interested than fewer teams interested. Now, this hasn't really been my story. We've had other people following this, but I'm obviously very interested because I'm, you know, I'm a Tim Lincecum admirer.
Mm-hmm.
And just analyzing it from what I do know, I mean, the way you frame the question is, remind me how you frame the question.
Well, I'm thinking Tim Lincecum Giants is maybe the better match than any of the other teams,
right,
even though
okay.
He wouldn't be in the rotation.
You asked me, why wouldn't the Giants appeal to him? Well, the problem is the Giants do appeal to him, but he's got conflicting interests.
Right.
He's got two passions. One is he loves being a Giant. The other is he loves being a starter. Right? So
yeah.
He's got to figure out which of those is more important to him. If I were him, and I loved being a Giant as much as he clearly does, I would come back to the Giants in whatever role they wanted to put me in and show them that my stuff is back. You know, the people who went to that workout last week were impressed. He got his fastball back up into at least the low 90s. Curveball looked good. You don't know whether he can maintain it as he has to go out there regularly. I think that's always the issue with a player who's had some health issues, a player who's starting to age just a little bit. It's still in there. The question is, can it be in there outing after outing? So if I were him, I'd go back, demonstrate my stuff is still there, and then wait for an opportunity, because one's going to rise. They're not going to use five starters all season. And the alternative, though, is the Angels, who have a definite need. Just need starting pitching, badly need starting pitching depth. That ballpark works for him. That geography kind of works for him. That's got to be tempting. But he's going to need a lot of time after he signs anyway. I think we've gotten down to the period where he needs to decide this week and get out there and start pitching somewhere.
We'll continue the conversation with Jason Stark from ESPN in just a moment.
Hey, how'd you get those cool new shirts for the trade show so fast?
Access!
Who makes all that great clothing for high schools and colleges?
Access!
How do I get my company logo embroidered on some nice polo shirts?
Access!
Access Uniforms is your go-to resource for customized clothing. Just call us to find the right product, email your artwork, and your order will be on its way directly from our factory right here in Burlingame. Call Access Uniforms at 877-755-LOGO. That's 877-755-L-O-G-O.
Let's get to our final topic, and this is really appropriate too, considering the Giants game ended with a double challenge on Sunday. Right. They had a situation where it was a double play, and Brandon Belt clearly kept his foot on the bag, but the Diamondbacks were also challenging Brandon Crawford at second base whether he had his foot on the bag there. And then the Giants were fortunate. It was both outs were called, so they won that challenge, and the Diamondbacks lost their challenge. But, you know, and I don't mind it, Jason, you know, that you have a few challenges here and there that are really important. But I just think it becomes too much, too long. That one took 3.5 minutes, and that's the problem I have. It's just that you're slow-mowing, you're freezing plays, you're taking so long. I think the blatantly bad calls should be reviewed, but after that, I don't know. I mean, what's your thought? What's the latest you're hearing talking to people, and what do you think?
Well, I mean, you know that I wrote a piece about this last week and really find it interesting. You know, what you're referring to, I think, is, all right, we got a couple of different things going on in the sport this year. One is time of game is up quite a bit, actually, and replay reviews are up by 35%. Compared with this time last year.
That's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not convinced these are related developments. Even with all the new replays, the average team still challenges 2 plays a week. I know we had 2 challenges on one play, but it's, right. Really, it's an average of 2 replays every 3 games. And that's really it. Now, the overwhelming sentiment that I got from everyone, regardless of those stats, is they want the process to speed itself up somehow.
Yeah.
Right? The question is how. And, you know, it's funny. The idea that's probably got the most traction is put a time limit on how long a manager gets to challenge. It might be 20 seconds, it might be 30 seconds, some limit. It makes sense. But here's the issue. Recognize it. That's going to save very little time. The average amount of time spent now waiting for that decision is 35 seconds following the end of the play. So, I mean, you're talking about saving 5, 10, 15 seconds, right, on 2 challenges every couple of days, right?
Right.
So when you start thinking about it that way, I don't think that there's an appreciable time of gain advantage that you're going to get from that kind of rule. And the average, it's interesting, the other stat that I heard is that the average game is lengthened by replay by, what would you guess, Joe, 15 seconds. 15
wow.
seconds, because that's when you average it all out over the course of every game, 15 games a night. It's really not replay that is causing the games to be slower this year.
Wow, you know, it's hard to believe.
Yeah, but, you know, you look in an action sport, it's always disconcerting when the action just grinds to a stop. And that's what happens in replay. I still think this is better than the NFL. The NFL, how many plays are reviewed in an NFL game?
Too many.
4, 5, 6 a day,
right.
A game? It feels like it, right?
Right.
And we're not seeing that in the average baseball game. But when you ask people, all right, why is it so willfully accepted in the NFL but not in baseball, they always have the same kind of answer, which is, oh, it's only once a week. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, in California, it might be 11 in the morning. We got time to burn.
Well,
when it happens in baseball at 10:45 p.m., it feels twice as long.
It does. Well, you know, here's my final point on this. I mean, I think I like the idea of that the manager gets less time, but also I think at the replay center, you're asking umpires on the field to make a split second decision. Well, how about, you know, you only get a minute to look at that video? I mean, 3 minutes, too long. And I know what you're saying about it's not that much time, but it seems like an eternity when you're just sitting there and nothing's happening.
It does. I mean, and that's really a TV phenomenon. In the park, you know, they're showing those replays on the board, and fans tend to get pretty worked up. But on TV, it's it's just a lot of nothing, whole lot of nothing. And that is an issue. But when I raise this point to people inside Major League Baseball, that players, managers, coaches are saying, if you can't decide in 2 minutes, let's just move on. Here's what they said to me. Do you want to get these calls right or not? Think about that play yesterday in that Giants game. If that call is decided differently, tie game, going extra innings, right. Who knows what happens. Because that call is decided correctly by replay, no matter how long it takes, Giants, you know, shake hands and win. So do you want that call decided correctly or not, Joe?
I think everybody who listens to this podcast wanted that call correctly because they know the Giants are in first place in the middle of May.
Yeah.
And that means everything. So
get the calls right, and that's really why we've got replay. Think about it. You know, the right team wins now pretty much every night. You don't have teams winning because of some crummy call that becomes the lead story on SportsCenter. Those days are over thanks to replay. How is that a bad thing?
No, that is a good thing. Hopefully they tweak it.
I got your one over.
Hopefully they tweak it, though, just a little bit. Hey, Jason, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And I hope to catch up with you later on this summer.
That'd be great, Joe. Always a pleasure, man.
That's Jason Stark from ESPN. Coming up on Wednesday, we'll hear from Greg Papa from CSN Bay Area and 95.7 The Game. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.